and welcome to the New Moon Tarot reading for the new moon that fell at 11:49 a.m. UK time this morning, Tuesday the 25th of October. Before I start with the reading itself, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the schedule of the new moon reading moving forward. It follows on the heels of having to cancel the new moon reading last month due to a combination of lack of time and also illness, because I think that the household came down with COVID and I was unable to do anything but croak, really. But what has happened is that since this past September, I'm now working full time. And it's not only full time, but it's 6 days a week, which leaves me very little time to be able to organise the rest of my life on the day and a half that I have at the weekend. I have to be very careful about my energy levels, and I have to be very careful about my priorities, because obviously I have several priorities and the new moon reading is one of them, but there are other ones that come first, not least of which is my health and my work outside of this, and also my one-to-one paid readings with clients. And what I don't want to do is promise you the new moon reading every 28, 29 days, and then the same thing happens as it did last month, where I'm just simply not able to record it. Nor do I want to say to you that I'm going to draw up a schedule and say, well, I will record it this month and then next month and then I'll skip 2 months and record it then. I don't want to plan ahead because life is unpredictable. It's particularly unpredictable at the moment. And I'm not just talking about me, I'm talking about what is going on in the collective. And I would rather just do a sort of, this sounds a little bit offhand, but it's not. It's not meant to be a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants approach to the new moon reading, in as much as I will take stock of time available, my energy levels, every month, and see if it is going to be possible to record. It takes a full 8 to 10 hours to do pre-prod, recording, post-production, and all of the stuff that's involved with getting a podcast live and getting the message out. So hopefully with a little bit of planning the week before, I will be able to fulfill a lot of the new moon readings. But I am telling you now that it is not going to be all of them, and something has to give. And in light of the changes in my life, and particularly my professional life, what is having to give are things that I do after hours and on the weekends. That is as it is now, but I have a reading for you this month and we will see what the cards have in store for us. I have shuffled the deck, I have cut the cards, I have dealt the cards, and I have three cards face down in front of me. For those of you who are very familiar with the way that I work, then please do skip to the first timestamp, or the timestamp for the first card at least, and you can get going on the reading straight away. For those of you who are still listening, then welcome back if this is not your first new moon reading, and welcome to you if it is. The way that I read is that there is always, there are three cards and there are set positions with meanings for each of those cards, and it remains as ever, card number one being the foundation card. So that is something that we are coming into the reading with. It is in the process of happening or has already happened. So in other words, there is very little control that we have over this, and in fact sometimes it's already happened to the extent that it's happened way back in our lives, and sometimes it's part of a repeating pattern, so it has happened years and years ago and then possibly just keeps recurring, and in some way there will be an echo of this now. So the foundation is key to something, as a foundation is, it is the structure upon which the rest of the reading is built. It will in some way inform the way that things unfold and the flavor of what the reading gives. It's going to give a tone, it's going to give a feeling to it, and it's going to give a direction. That's card number one. Card number two is the current weather, and this is one of the themes of the next 28, 29 days and beyond, but it will be a key theme. It may not be a massive theme in as much as it takes up a lot of time and space in your day-to-day life, but it will be a key theme nonetheless. Even if it feels subtle, it's going to have an effect. And it's going to have an effect in a way that lasts, it lasts forever, essentially. There is a shift, and then that will have an impact on things moving forward. You will not necessarily be able to identify it by something that is sort of big and illuminated in your life, though you might get a card with the current weather that is very clearly identifiable as something that is front and center of your experience now. But if it is subtle, you may only find it after it's happened, or that it's a sort of slow discovery of something, a slow emerging of something that will be no less impactful. The amount of time and space it takes up is actually not indicative of the kind of impact that it has. It's sometimes very, very subtle thematic appearances in your life can have a profound effect. So don't feel disappointed if it's not something that you can immediately identify. So that is your current weather for the next 28, 29 days. And the foundation is really paving the way for that. And then the final card, card number 3, is the agency card or the tool card. This is in some way where you can react or act rather, or respond perhaps even better, meaningfully with the current weather. So for example, the current weather, if you think about it literally as weather, you will not be able to control a thunderstorm that's going on around you, but you may be able to, with the tool card, take shelter in some way. It has no direct impact on what is happening, but it will certainly have an impact on you and your experience of it. So those are the cards 1, 2, and 3. I will sometimes draw a fourth card, very rarely, probably not today. For some reason, it just doesn't feel like it. So with that in mind now, and now that you know the structure of the reading, for those of you who are new to it, let's get on with card number 1. So the foundation card, card number 1, so something that has happened in the distant past or recent past, and it will always be the recent past because it in some way is going to have a foundation to what is going to be happening or coming up this month. The first card is the Princess of Swords. For those of you who have listened to the last New Moon Tarot reading, which I did in, was it August or September? Gosh, I can't even remember. But for those of you who did, you will probably be aware of the fact that the Princess of Swords appeared then as well. Now, what's interesting is that it was the agency card, and now this is the foundation card, which tells me that something that you were invited to use in a way to apply so that you could respond in a proactive way to your environment has become something that has seated itself in your experience. It is in some way paving the way now. So in other words, it has been to one extent or another, to a greater degree or a lesser degree, it doesn't really matter actually, it has been integrated so that it is foundational. It has worked its way down into the roots of things so that you are able then to take this into the current weather. Now, I have no idea what the current weather is. I have no idea what the agency card is for this month. And believe you me, I really, really shuffled the cards this month as well. So it's interesting in and of itself that the Princess of Swords has shown up. She is the all-seeing, youthful and naive quality of swords. Let me just take a step back. Let me explain swords as if you don't know what they are, and explain princesses as if you don't know what they are. And apologies to those of you who are very familiar with the way that I read and how I interpret the different suits and the court cards. But I think it's worth it, not just simply for those people who are unfamiliar with tarot, but also it is very helpful to have this sense of revisiting interpretations and meanings so that they are even more deeply embedded in the psyche. So swords are the third lot of cards in the suit. So it starts off with wands and then cups and then swords and then pentacles. So it is yang, yin, yang, yin. You've got two phallic yang objects in wands and swords, and then you have two yin objects in cups, which is like a womb, and also then discs, which are like an egg. So there is a real balance with that. But alongside that is that there is an evolution from wands through to discs or pentacles, same thing. And that is the evolution from something that is matterless and to total matter. It goes from light to heavy, from ether to dense. It is the story of incarnation. To do with swords, it is the one before full incarnation. It governs the world of thought, of the mind, of the written word, of the spoken word. It is to do with psychology and our psyche and our conscious awareness, also our unconscious awareness, but it's how we direct our conscious awareness as well. And the Princess of Swords, you can see that there is a directing of conscious awareness very much so in the eyes around her headdress. The princesses are the initiators or initiatrixes of their suit. Without the princesses, which are the pages in some of the other decks, the suit would not exist. So the Princess of Swords in some way births, is the bringer in of that suit and its characteristics into awareness, into, out of this field of potential, which are the aces. The princess essentially takes the ace and brings it down. So she is an aspect of our personality, but she is separate from the prince and the queen and the knight, in as much as she is there as the igniter of that suit. And then the knight and the queen and the prince are really the qualities as we evolve through that suit. So the Princess of Swords, without her, there would be no awareness. And given the fact that she is the initiatrix, there is also the suggestion, and also with the title, that she is young. Young does not mean stupid. It means guileless. It means naive, but in the best possible way. I will often liken the Princess of Swords to the child who simply says the truth, and the truth can be deeply uncomfortable and embarrassing to adults around them, can be politically incorrect, but is simply the way that the child sees something, and is also without guile. So in other words, it's not done from a manipulative point of view. It's not there to manipulate. It simply is the child who says what they see. And the Princess of Swords is the invitation, or has been, and this is foundational. So this is something that you are coming in with. You have had this experience yourself. It may be an experience of yourself. It may be an experience of someone else. It will refer to a person or an entity in some way, but frequently a person, and almost certainly you as well. It might be somebody else, but it will also be you. But it will be about a person who is foundational to what is going to be going on, because they were able not only to say the truth, but also to acknowledge the fact that there was a truth in the first place. So the Princess of Swords can tell the truth because the Princess of Swords sees the truth. And you can see that with the headdress. It is all seeing, it's suggesting that those eyes go round 360 degrees. There is nothing that she misses. She's not like the Queen of Wands, who is staring directly at us. She is head slightly to one side and almost quite self-protective in a way. It's as if her hair is sort of falling around her and protecting her in a certain way. And the fact that her head is tilted as well, it's not an aggressive stance. It's not one where she is confrontational, but rather she is protective of herself, but also in some way the position suggests that she needs protecting. I would suggest that she needs protecting by that adult part of us. So if the Princess of Swords is you, then what the adults can do, or the inner adult or parent, can provide protection and provide a way of safeguarding the princess as she is able to speak the truth. So in other words, the parental part or the adult part of you, because it could be either or both, enables the princess to be who she is. The adult or the parent does not shame or shut the child down. They accept the child for who they are and they give them the voice to speak. And again, this is not about enabling crappy behavior or anything like that, because the Princess of Swords in her purest form is, as I said, sometimes what she will say will be very uncomfortable, but she is saying it simply because it is an expression of what it is that she sees. She reveals the truth, and she's also revealing the truth to herself as she says it, as well as to other people. So the Princess of Swords, in some ways, I think, asks for a certain amount of watchfulness on the part of the adult aspect of ourselves. In other words, to stand by ourselves when the princess steps forward is not to abandon ourselves and make her feel like she's standing there on her own, vulnerable, but rather to have her back, if you see what I mean. In the process of the Princess of Swords speaking the truth, she also liberates herself. And by liberating herself, she is liberating an aspect of who it is that we are, an aspect of who it is that you are. That sword is not there to maim or destroy. The Ace of Swords, which she holds there as the initiatrix of the Ace, can do anything it is built to do. It can be a peaceful application, or, you know, it can be sheathed under her arm like it is here, or it can be used as a weapon. It can also be used as a tool. It could be used as, I've often referred to in the past, as, for example, a scalpel. A blade can kill and a blade can save. And in this case, the blade is just there under her arm, sheathed. And we can see that the ropes that were around her wrists and also around her shoulder have been cut through. And also the chain around her wrist has been cut through as well, which suggests that the sword is an incredibly powerful one. And anyone who's been on the receiving end of that kind of clear, unobstructed truth knows how powerful that can be. And anyone who has been able to speak clear, unobstructed truth, because in some way we have given voice to the Princess of Swords within, knows how powerful that can be as well. It's very often met with silence because there is nothing else that needs to be said, and all of the affectations and all of the pretenses simply fall away. And I would suggest that the ropes are affectations and pretenses as well. But it's also where we keep ourselves bound for fear of the consequences of what we're going to say, or keep ourselves bound out of some kind of loyalty to something that no longer feels like the truth for us anymore. Now, it's interesting when I look at the card that the word that stands out most of all is rebellion. And rebellion suggests something that is really quite violent. And I'm going to suggest here that that is not always the case, or not necessarily the case, with the Princess of Swords. Swords can be violent, they can maim. And the shadow side of the Princess of Swords would be to use this as a weapon. But the Princess of Swords, in her clearest, well-aspected part of ourselves, is rebellion against something that no longer makes sense. And it can feel like rebellion to the people who impose those rules. It can feel like a rebellion to a part of us that tries to keep the princess silent, you know, because otherwise she's going to get us into trouble or our lives may change. And it's incredible how much we will resist change even while a part of us strives for it as well. And so that can feel like rebellion and it can feel like a lot of upheaval. So rebellion, I think, is a fantastic word here, because while it is suggestive of something that is potentially violent, for me, more than that, it is about questioning what has up until now remained unquestioned, has gone totally accepted as just simply the way we do things around here, or the way that things should happen. And the Princess of Swords asks us really? Should it happen? What is should? Who was it that decided that things must be the way that they are? And why is it that I need to accept that? A couple of other phrases that come out are, I think it says here, from haze to clarity. That's ironic, isn't it? I can't see it. I think it says from haze to clarity, which makes sense. So in other words, that haze of the inability to see things clearly. Now, I know that in certain circles, they talk about fog, which is fear, obligation, and guilt. And fog is that idea of haze. It is the things that overlay the truth of things because of patterning, deep patterning and allegiances that we have to either ideas or to people that have gone unquestioned, because the consequences of not being allegiant are too dire to contemplate. Or rather, they were perhaps too dire in the past, and perhaps now what it is that we are simply caught in our own cycle of obligation and fear and guilt. We are the gatekeepers of our own prisons, because it's just simply what we've done, so it's what we continue to do. And actually the threats are more like ghosts than anything else. So that idea of haze is the idea of the obfuscation. It's the lack of clarity, the fogginess around thought and the fogginess around feeling. The swords will obviously carry all the preceding suits as well. So there is the idea that emotions are there as well under the surface, and that that haze is very often a defense mechanism that keeps us, for some reason, a part of us doesn't want that change. So it keeps us there, and it does that by having a sense of dissociation, by not actually connecting, because by connecting, we would have to then go through what it was that that happened originally. We would have to deal with pain. We would have to deal with our reality. We would also have to grow up and free ourselves. So the haze keeps us in our place. And the Princess of Swords is really the antidote to that haze, is the cutting through of that haze and the ability then to see and speak the truth. But there's also another phrase in there which is interesting, which says, victory over moods. Now, victory over moods, well, moodiness is an interesting one, because moodiness, again, is an overlay of something. It hides the truth. And again, it is the cups, the emotions, feelings that come up from the unconscious. The moodiness is always really an overlay of some kind of truth underneath. So when we feel moody, and that it's a good word, it's not necessarily angry. It is the fact that we are kind of enveloped and perhaps trapped by mood, by affect, by feelings, but ones that are not quite easy to decipher. We're not able to necessarily pick them apart and identify them. They just feel like this amorphous mass that that then sort of strings around us, a bit like the rope around the Princess of Swords, and keeps us held in place as well. It flattens everything. It takes the shine off things. It takes the sheen out of life. It takes vitality and dulls it. And so moodiness, in a way, is really an invitation to look at what's underneath. Why am I feeling this way? What's going on? And it's interesting that a phrase has come up from A Course in Miracles, which, while I'm not a follower of A Course in Miracles, I did look at the book some years ago. And there was a phrase that stood out that really made a lot of sense to me. And I'm not surprised it did, given the fact that I have a sort of psychotherapeutic background, and Course in Miracles was written by a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist. I can't remember which one Helen Schuckman was. But the phrase was, "I am never upset for the reason I think." And while there is a very clear underlying reason for that in A Course in Miracles, I think that we can apply that in life as well. Because there are some times when we are upset that it's clean and clear. the Princess of Swords is free to move and is free to feel her emotions. And sometimes those emotions are straightforward. You know, it is straightforward pain. It's straightforward grief. It's straightforward joy, whatever it is. But sometimes it is difficult, as I was saying, to decipher feelings. And that being upset there is not the reason why. It may be that you have a particular target for being upset, or, you know, it's like your fault or it's that fault, but it's not actually, because if you come down to it and you try and attach blame to the particular person or object, including yourself, it doesn't quite stick. You want it to, you really want it to, but it doesn't quite stick and it doesn't make sense. And there's something else going on underneath, and that hook goes much deeper, much further back. So the Princess of Swords, again, is about liberation from that. And it's the liberation of being able to see clearly and being able to state the truth. This is not necessarily an instantaneous process, though it can be. As adults, we would be very lucky to be able to have that sense of openness to the world where we were able to access the truth immediately, in the way that the Princess of Swords would do, in the way that a child does. But we have so much history that we bring with us, our own personal history, collective history, cultural pressures, all of that, that it sometimes takes a long time to reach the truth. But the Princess of Swords suggests that whether the process is instantaneous or whether it takes time, that there is liberation, and that liberation is there by being able to see, by being willing to open our eyes. Opening our eyes can be one of the most difficult things that we can do. And so this is foundational. This is something that that you are familiar with. It may be something that you have been in process with for, you know, for years. It may be something that you have recently encountered. It may be a specific event as well. It may not necessarily be a process. It might be something where you literally, your eyes were opened to something and you finally saw something for what it was. And in that moment, some kind of liberation took place in that, that there was a freedom afforded to you because you were able to acknowledge something. And then the quality of whatever it was that you were facing changes. And the quality of your experience of not only it, but of various aspects of your life can change as a result. It can really be quite dramatic, even if it's subtle. So that's the Princess of Swords. That's foundational. There is something where rebellion has been key. Rebellion in its many forms, rebellion in its many flavors. So that is paving the way, this idea of being open to seeing the truth, speaking the truth, and liberating oneself through the truth. There is some way that it is going to be foundational to card number two, and that is the current weather for this next lunar cycle and beyond. And that is the Seven of Discs, which in this deck is called Failure. And let's talk about failure. More specifically, let's talk about failure in the context of this particular tarot deck, but also in tarot as a whole, or at least my approach to failure, and then talk about failure in a more general sense. Sevens are very important cards in the tarot deck. They are, for me, a moment of reckoning in one's life. And it's very often a spiritual moment. In other words, and when I say a spiritual moment, it's not really about one's belief systems as much as it is a moment of reckoning about who it is that you are, what life is, about existence, about your inner world. There is something that is meaningful about the Seven of Discs that is not just practical. I like to see the minor arcana cards, because this is a minor arcana, as something that is day-to-day. But the seven is the day-to-day experience of something that is deeper than that. It is the idea of a choice point and a choice of something to do with where one puts one's time and energy and resources. Discs are the material world. They are anything that we experience in this world. They also hold all of the other suits within them. So it's not just about material stuff. It is the very journey that it took to become something solid. It is the journey that we take to become this flesh-enveloped person. And the seven is the choice point of, well, it's kind of a battle, I think, in a way, between the ego and the soul. And that sounds very highfalutin, but let me try and get that a little bit more rooted in something that you can identify with. Discs, being material, are very often about working towards resources. Let's take this on an entirely practical level. It is about amassing wealth of a certain kind on this material plane. Now, that may be financial wealth, but it also might be a wealth of knowledge. It might be a wealth of resources. It might be wealth of one's time and energy. It is something about working towards something on this plane where you are working towards an achievement. So you had the Three of Discs, for example, which is the starting out. It's the apprenticeship start of something. And then you move towards this point here where things get a little bit more choppy. In other words, all of the good intentions that you set out with, which were fantastic because otherwise you wouldn't have set out in the first place, with that dedication to learning your art, to going back to study, the three of discs is really about that idea of understanding your limitations, knowing that you need further training, and putting your time and energy into that. So it could be about education, it could be about learning a skill, it could be about going into therapy. You know, I mean, the iterations of this are endless, but it is the embarking, you know, full of hope of that journey and knowing that you have a learning curve. And then you start to be able to reach a level of not mastery, but a proficiency in things. You are no longer the beginner's mind. You are able to start doing something. And then you begin to start to see material things happen as a result of that. So, for example, with your studies, let's say you managed to get past your second year of university with really good grades, and now you're entering third year and it all looks pretty good, and the work that you've put in thus far has been great. Or it could be in therapy that you've made some kind of breakthrough and in some way understand something that has been going on, which has remained sort of out of your ability to see it for ever. You know, it's the first time that you've actually been able to see something. And perhaps with a work project, you are beginning, having sunk all of your savings into it, you're beginning to start to see a return on your investment. And then you come to the Seven of Discs. And the Seven of Discs is that moment where the direction you thought you were going in and the direction that you find yourself in are different. So at its most basic, it is perhaps that suddenly when you are striking up your business and everything was going well, that suddenly there are massive overheads to do with maintenance of some kind of equipment that you have. And then you realize that actually all of this capital that you had doesn't exist anymore, because you're going to have to sink it back into doing something. Or in fact, perhaps the bill that you're getting, you know, you're getting landed with is bigger than you can afford. Or that when you enter your third year, that you realize that you have to take up a particular course that that you weren't expecting to do, and that actually you are not very good at. So, for example, with me, I went into university, wanted to do psychology degree, didn't realize that in my third year that I would be hit with the fact that a really significant proportion of my final grade was going to be statistics, and failed it miserably. And I didn't even want to go to my lectures. I thought I'd left maths behind when I was 16. I had no idea. I obviously just didn't read the prospectus very well, that statistics were going to be such a huge part of my psychology degree. And that was a moment where everything that I'd worked towards I had to reassess my options. And that's really what the Seven of Discs is. It's reassessing options. To the ego, it's failure. and to the soul, its opportunity. And I think that that's the most simple way of seeing this. To the ego, having to throw plans out or having to do things differently can feel tantamount to failure. And there is no way of making that sound pretty. This is the card of an ego perspective of the disc's world. And the ego feels that something has just simply not worked out the way that it was planning to work out, and everything feels like it's turned to shit. And if you look at the discs, they are all above this figure who is bowed down. So it's almost like the figure in the three of discs, except this time, like in quite a few of the other cards, the cards that are particularly sort of psychologically, psychically heavy. The figure is now sort of washed out of colour. There's no colour. Very, very small, dwarfed by these discs that are above him. He can feel the weight of them. And perhaps there is that idea that they are just so overbearing and overwhelming that even while they are hovering in the air and they're not touching him, that he is in some way crushed because he is bent over. It feels incredibly heavy. The light source behind has been blocked out. There is the feeling of the light being removed, and that is a metaphor for that sort of shiny promise of something disappearing, being taken away. This is a spiritual moment, and I mean that in any sense that you want to take it. But for me, it is to do with a reassessment and a reconnecting with what actually matters. It is a moment of accepting that to a part of us, that ego that was very outwardly motivated, had a particular goal in mind, and attaches material success, i.e. discs, and the amassing of discs, to a sense of being worthy, or a sense of legitimacy. To the ego, this can feel like a complete defeat. And this is this idea of failure. The ego believes it is failure. In some way, the plan hasn't worked out, and that's all that it can see. And very often when we are faced with a brick wall, when we were walking down an alleyway thinking that we were going to get to a clearing once we'd reached the end of the buildings, if we reach a brick wall, then that it can feel like that. One minute we were walking very, very sure about where we were going and what we were going to do when we got there. And then we are met with something that, it's the meeting of the wall that basically eclipses everything else. We don't start applying our mind to think about all of the options that are available to us. For a moment, we are just gobsmacked that we can't actually get where we wanted to go. And that keeps us held in place for as long as it takes us to understand that we have more options than we think. So as I said, to the ego, what is failure is actually an opportunity to the soul. Or rather more, that the soul understands that there is a bigger picture, in as much as the soul can understand. The soul's not worried about walls. The soul's not worried about statistics components in psychology degrees. You know, it's not worried about the overheads and the bills that you have to pay in a business. Even while we are, and even while it may feel profoundly unfair, and even while there can be a considerable and painful impact in our lives of the appearance of the Seven of Discs in whatever form it is an invitation to reassess and find out what's really important, and perhaps to understand that there is a course correction that needs to happen, and that it may actually be in your better interests. It may not be in the interests of the ego. It may certainly not be in the interests of your plans, your bank balance, your hopes, your dreams. But actually, from the soul's perspective, the soul is not particularly interested in any of those things. The soul is interested in growing. The soul is interested in evolving in helping to make you a whole person, in helping you move towards wholeness. Wholeness is never achieved. That could be another idea of failure is, oh my goodness, I'm not as whole as I thought I was. You know, that the soul wants to grow. The soul wants to discover and grow and expand. The soul is not really interested in negative or positive experiences. They are all part of the same thing. The soul doesn't particularly it's not really interested in those darker aspects of our personality that we unearth, that have possibly been our undoing because we consigned them to the closet. The soul's not interested in why we did that or whether we did that. The soul is interested in throwing open those closet doors so that we can have a look. And very often, when we avoid something, or when we are so hell-bent on wanting to achieve something, we are very often avoiding something at the same time, it will in some way come and stare us straight in the face even while we were trying to run away from it. And so the Seven of Discs is that moment of reckoning. It is the moment of reckoning where we decide what it is that's more important. Is it what it was that we held dear and we clung to as a vision for what we felt was the right thing for us? Or is it that we adopt a more philosophical approach about life, grieve for whatever it is that has failed, make a plan for those things that didn't work out, and then decide what to do next? So if I look at the figure and then I look at the discs above, there is something I notice, and that is that actually the configuration in the Seven of Discs is incredibly geometrical. It is a very beautifully arranged figure above, except there is one disc that's out of place. It's almost that reminder of the ace to go back to basics, to understand, you know, what was it that you were setting out to do? Where is it that your values are no longer matching with what your intentions were? Where was it that perhaps you left your own path of integrity, where you sold yourself down the river in some way? You made one too many compromises. In some way you aren't expressing more of yourself, or where there are aspects of yourself that are asking for your attention that you really don't want to have a look at. And believe you me, the Princess of Swords stands you in fabulous stead to be able to have a look at this. There she is. She's foundational. She is looking towards the Seven of Discs. It's almost as if saying, look, you've been here before. You've been able to open your eyes and see, and you have experienced a kind of freedom with that. How is it that you're able to experience the Seven of Discs in a different way, that you have this moment of reckoning? Can you expand and grow through that so that your experience of what it is that is apparently failure changes and then perhaps shifts your life, your material life around you? And then that ace can perhaps be that going back to the drawing board moment, that giving up of things that are no longer working for you, that no longer serve you. That moment when you look at the wall and you decide, right, I'm just going to turn around and go back somewhere else, or I am going to climb over the wall, or I am going to sit here and wait and see what occurs to me. I'm going to see what it is that presents itself. Because in that moment where we give up that idea of knowing absolutely, that so when we adopt the idea of beginner's mind, which is again the Princess of Swords, it's quite incredible what can happen in terms of opportunities that present themselves to us and new things that come in that we weren't expecting, that we couldn't even begin to plan for. And I think that for me, that is what the Seven of Discs is. It is that reassessment. And I'm going to have a look at the writing on it to see if there is anything here. Okay, what I can see here is earn the success of the effort. And I think that that idea of earning the success of the effort is that the success might not necessarily look like what you think it looks like. Success isn't necessarily giving up. It just might be that the alternative is yet to present itself. The angle at which you look at things has yet to present itself. That sun is still there behind the discs. There is symmetry there but it is about thinking back and remembering what it was all about in the first place. Who were you? What were you trying to do? How has that changed? Who are you now? And what are you being called towards? And what aspects of yourself are calling you towards them too? And then remember that after the Seven of Discs comes the Eight of Discs, where there is that idea of then nurturing something that is coming to life in a way where you are protective and careful of what you've built, because now more than ever you are aware of your priorities, of what it is that you are there to do. Perhaps you have that kind of clarity and you have a clarity that you hadn't had before, but you also then have the support. You're not just on your own. There is a single figure here, and in the Eight of Discs there are five figures, as far as I can remember, under this growing tree that is starting to take shape. Again, if you go to the Waite-Smith deck, the Eight of Pentacles is that workman in his workshop. Then it's like the three of pentacles, but it's now he is adept, he is skilled, he is now, his focus is there, there is a renewed sense of purpose and activity, and he knows what he's doing. But here is your moment. Here is the Seven of Discs. Here is the asking for reassessment. Princess of Swords has brought you here. The Princess of Swords continues to be your companion in this. This is an aspect of you. It could also be an aspect of somebody else, but it will be you too. What is it that you can see now, or you are going to be able to see for the first time? And then the final card, which is the Tool card, the Agency card, is, and this may not be able to mitigate failure, or it may not be able to drive failure off, avoid it. In fact, you may not, your soul doesn't necessarily want you to avoid it. A part of you may want to avoid it, but your soul may not. And also, failure doesn't have to be massive, so you don't have to brace yourself for something massive. It never really comes up in the way that we expect it to. So it's not really about preparing yourself, but it is, it's something where you'll know it when it happens. And the Tool card will equip you in some way, along with the Princess of Swords, to deal with, not so much to deal with the failure, but to deal with yourself around failure, to deal with life around this concept of failure, or what feels like failure. And that is the Ten of Discs. So we have another Discs card, which is fantastic. So you've got this very powerful Swords card, which is the Yang action kind of thing. And then you've got these two Yin cards as well. And the Ten of Discs is, I think, very simple, and it will apply differently depending on who you are and your circumstances. And that is to cash out or cash in on something. Something is there ripe for the picking, for the harvest, and that harvest will in some way assist you in terms of dealing with the Seven of Discs. On an entirely practical, if you take it very practically, for example, it may be that somebody buys you out of the business, that there's an offer that comes in. It's time to wrap things up, it's time to move on, then you do that. It's that moment of the Ten of Discs is about handing one thing over from one person to another. It can be about legacies, but it's also about reaching the end of a line and getting out now while the going is good, but also being able to make the most of the opportunities that you've amassed or whatever it is that you have gathered, because this is the right time for harvest. I'm going to go to the book for the Ten of Discs, because I think that for some reason it just feels right to read that. So I am, if I can find it, here we go. So Ten of Discs is good pay, riches and abundance, good thoughts, material and non-material success. Good pay, riches and abundance, good thoughts, material and non-material success. The idea of success is something that, again, to the ego is not necessarily the same as the idea of success to one's own personal, psychological, emotional evolution. And I think it's worth bearing in mind that that idea of success can be experienced on many levels and not necessarily the one that you had your sights set on at the beginning. But the rewards are greater. It may not feel it, that may sting, you may even be pissed off to hear that, but the rewards are eventually greater. And the idea of the 10 of discs is that there is no better time to make the most of something that you can then use in order to address or to work with the 7 of discs in your life. Another tiny piece of writing on the card, which I had to grab my camera to magnify, is the ability to pass on inside wealth. And maybe the idea of the 7 of discs is something that equips you or empowers you to empower others in some way, whether directly or indirectly. I'm not suggesting that all of you need to go out and then preach something based on your experiences, though perhaps some of you will, and it will be useful not only for you but for the people who hear you. But rather, there is going to be an experience that enriches others as well, and possibly just simply by your being who you are. One of the philosophies that I really live by is the fact that when you start to change, it's interesting how people around you appear to change as well. And I think that's because the way that we relate unconsciously to others then impacts our conscious relationships with them. And when we have gone through something like the 7 of discs, whether it's large or small in whatever area of our life, if we have taken it from the perspective of the soul, in other words, the Princess of Swords perspective, it can in some way shift our own attitudes, not only towards ourselves, but to life. And that also shifts our relationships with others. And that shifts how they see us and also how they see life as well in some ways. We are not responsible for anyone else. This is not about having to feel responsible for how others experience their own lives and experience the world and also how they experience you, but rather just understanding the interconnectedness of all things and understanding that there are things that we pass on to others that we may never even be aware of, that we may have impacts in ways that we will never know. And yet by experiencing the idea of failure in inverted commas, we are able to reframe that idea of failure and perhaps then discover aspects of ourselves that are valuable, not only to us, but valuable in myriad ways, large and small, and again, that we may not even ever know the impact of. And the idea is then that the final goal is not to have a positive impact on the world. That's, again, that is, I think that's a plan of the ego. But rather to perhaps adopt a broader view of our own experience in life and how that can inform and how it is able to have an impact on our environment and on people around us. And by understanding that interconnectedness, then perhaps we understand that the idea of failure isn't perhaps failure at all, but it is simply another call towards another aspect of life, another way of experiencing life, a way of experiencing ourselves, and perhaps of redefining what's important to us and where it is that we are going and why. And also being able to redefine the journey that we're on so that we perhaps experience the path that we're walking very differently. I'm going to leave it there, and I will invite you to send your questions, your comments. You can email sarah@integratedtarot.com. And I will be back when I am back, whenever that is, whether that's next month or the month after, but you will know in good time. In the meantime, take very good care of yourself.